Welcome to the Global Woman Series, a summer of honest conversations with women navigating life between worlds. From grief and reinvention to finding love at 39, these are the real, raw, and wise stories of global women redefining home, identity, and connection. Over the next few weeks, you'll hear from inspiring voices who've lived the questions about belonging, purpose, relationships, and what it really means to choose this life abroad. I'm Amanda Maxime, and this is This Expat Life. I'm so glad that you're here, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Hey, welcome everyone to This Expat Life. I'm joined in the digital studio by Michael Weber. And Michael is a creative technologist and the founder of House of Peregrine, a creative studio and community-based network for people living abroad. And with a deep belief in the power of place, story, and shared experience, Michael crafts spaces, both online and in person, that help others feel connected and at home in themselves and on their journey. And through technology, collaborations, and thoughtful storytelling, Michael invites people to explore identity, belonging, creation, and truly craft their life stories with intention. And today I've invited Michael to speak about our relationships to our roots and places, because she has a very interesting story. Welcome, Michael.
First of all, thank you very much for having me and for that great introduction. I appreciate it. I don't know where to start.
Well, why don't we first start with where are you calling in from? Because that's a question I ask everyone on the show.
Yeah, I currently am based in Amsterdam in the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. I'm from the United States originally, from Salt Lake City. And yeah, I'm calling in from the studio at Fosbury in the center of the city.
Cool. And you've been here for 9 years, right?
I have. I was supposed to be here for a year and now it's been nine.
Yeah. Wow. And did you move straight from Utah to Amsterdam or did you have a stop in between as well?
You know, I did. I moved straight here. This was actually my first time living abroad. I had always grown up feeling like I didn't quite fit in, even though I was from there. I had heritage there. And so when my partner and I, who now have been together for 22 years, first got married, we had this goal of living abroad at some point. But by the time we had three kids, two companies, and a house, we still had not fulfilled that promise, which was kind of a little bit bigger of my goal than his. And so we made a pact to move abroad before our first child's fifth birthday, before they went to kindergarten. Mm-hmm. And we moved to the Netherlands, to Amsterdam, the day before he turned five.
Oh, wow. Mission accomplished. And what made you pick Amsterdam?
So at the time, my partner had a company with about 100 employees in Salt Lake City. And so we had been looking for a place that matched our values for probably about 10 years. Mm-hmm. We had lived as digital nomads before it was cool in 2004, around the world in a lot of places, just seeing if we could find a place that suited us a bit better. Not Salt Lake City is a great place. It just didn't suit us for that chapter of our lives. Mm-hmm. And so we were looking and finally it came down to two countries. So Copenhagen, cities, I guess I should say, Copenhagen and Amsterdam. And because we really wanted to spend when our little kids were little biking, and then a direct flight back to Salt Lake City became a huge factor. So among all the wonderful things about Amsterdam, the direct flight back, because my partner was traveling twice monthly back to the States.
Yeah, and I was on that flight recently. It is a direct flight. Yeah.
And it's grueling. It was a grueling first few years, but that was, it came down to values matching logistics.
Yeah. Okay. Very interesting. So let's talk a little bit more about why you left, because you said something interesting. You felt always like an outsider in the place where you grew up. Can you share a little bit more about your story of growing up in Utah and what made you feel like an outsider and why you had this urge to live abroad at some point?
Yeah. When I was younger, I just always wanted to speak a language. I always felt like the world is big and wonderful and beautiful. And most of the people I grew up with didn't share that for some reason. And I think it came in me. My family also isn't necessarily like this. And so what I've come to conclude is that sometimes people are just born that way. But at the time growing up, I didn't know. I just thought it was ambitious, wild, whatever you want to call it. But I just had a lot of ambition and I wanted to see a lot of the world.
Yeah.
And I wanted to speak a language, which is actually really tough to do in Salt Lake City. I felt like an outsider that way. I also wasn't part of the Mormon church, which was very prominent there. Mm-hmm. I never really identified with the role that little girls were given there as either. So there's a lot of reasons to feel a little bit like it's on the outside. So I never quite could figure out why everyone wanted me to be different as a girl. When I got a little older, I figured it out, but I always just gave myself a lot of freedom and privilege that wasn't necessarily offered in my culture.
Right. Okay. And could you maybe make that a little bit more concrete? Like, what were they expecting from you as a younger girl, or maybe also as an adult? Because you spent also quite some time as an adult in Salt Lake City, right?
Yeah. So for those who don't know or haven't seen the Netflix specials, Salt Lake City is, well, Utah in general, is the home of the Mormon Church. And so it's a very conservative and patriarchal religion. So it's a little bit like Islam or something like this in the way that it sees women. So it holds them very in high esteem, but they are not equal. And so while this plays out religiously, maybe fine for people, it also plays out culturally. And so for instance, when I went to my high school guidance counselor, they told me, oh, you don't want to go to university. You want to have children. So you don't need to make time for that. Or you need to be a teacher or something. You can be with your children during the summer. That should be your most important priority. And I kind of looked around like, what? Huh? It didn't make any sense to me because at home I was not being given the religious dogma part of this equation.
Right. I was curious about that. Okay. So that, in your family, it wasn't like that.
No. Okay. But I did grow up hearing stories of the Mormon pioneers that came across the plains from Europe. The Mormon handcart companies are a major part of my heritage. My grandma was a daughter of the Utah pioneers. And so that's really strong history. And with that comes a lot of grit, a lot of determination, a lot of religious pride, and just a lot of stories of perseverance.
Yeah. Oh, wow. It seems like such an interesting place, but I can imagine it's different when you grow up there, and it must be very, I don't know, limiting in a way, especially if you have these big ambitions.
Yeah. I mean, I know some people have made it work, but for instance, when I had children, there wasn't really reliable daycare. There's this cultural thing of women just, they actually run the entire economy for free. And so it's lovely if that's what your aspiration is, and I celebrate anyone who is, that's their aspiration. And I did spend 5 years at home with my kids, which I would not give back, but it wouldn't have been my first choice, and it wasn't the healthiest choice for me. So when we were looking at, I tell this story, I recently did a TED talk in Amsterdam about this moment when I was sitting in the minivan with three toddlers in the back, realizing that this was going to be my life for the next 18 years. Driving kids around. And that just wasn't, I want to spend a lot of time with my kids, but not in the car, not that way.
Yeah.
And so that really fueled this need to, even though we had three toddlers, my youngest was 18 months, my oldest was 5 years almost.
Yeah.
And so even though we had these kids, it was just like, we got to do this. This is the time. And so we made it happen.
Wow. So from that moment in the minivan till the move to Amsterdam was actually a short time to get it all arranged.
It was about 2 months. Yeah, we had just finished remodeling a house in the most ideal, beautiful place at the mouth of the canyon. We could ski in 15, 20 minutes. So by all accounts, it should have been paradise. But it just wasn't my life.
Yeah. Wow, it's so powerful that you're realizing that, like, oh, if I continue like this, this is going to be the rest of, the next 18 years is going to be the same. And it really doesn't match my values and who I am. So I'm going to make a change. How did your family respond to the move abroad and your decision?
Yeah, we initially thought we would just come for a year. So they were like, okay, we'll accept it. But I think there was two parts. There was part that was like, we don't want you to go. We don't like this. And then the other part that's like, but you're Mikkel and you do stuff like this and we accept you and love you. And I guess we'll make it work. What they didn't know, and I didn't know for sure, so I didn't tell them, was that the feelings I was having about where I lived weren't just me. So we moved early 2016, so August 2016. And then the world kind of changed overnight with elections and Brexit and all this stuff.
Oh, right.
So what I was feeling in myself was like, oh, this feeling was actually just not me. It was a collective change that was coming that put on top of my ambitions to live abroad and have my kids learn another language, it was just this urgency that was just like, you gotta go, you gotta go, you gotta go. And I just thought, oh, it's me. But it turned out it was collective.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, so now that you're in the Netherlands and you had the 9 years there, and collectively we've been going through quite a few things since, how do you now feel about, well, the place that you're in right now, but also your roots from back home?
Yeah, for me, it's been an incredible journey, both inwardly and career-wise, to be abroad. So I went through what I consider for women all of the major crucibles, if you will. So going from being a mom of children back to work, we all know that any relationship thing you have within your marriage or partnership becomes amplified. We remodeled a house. And so for me, each of these challenges or milestones, whatever you wish to call them, really came down to this thing. But it was always like, it's not just me. And so everything I would go through, like the first year, the first 3 months, the slump after the first 3 months, when you move somewhere, you know, finding your identity, going back home. I just started noticing it was actually something that everyone, it didn't matter which country they came from, was going through. And so that gave me a lot of comfort, but also led me to a personal journey that included looking deeply into some of the reasons my values are the way they are, being able to have some distance from where I grew up and learning at, you know, just looking at it a different way. And so suddenly, and then also it came with us, right? So wherever you go, you are, there you are, right? So some of this stuff was actually also in me and also in my partner and in my partnership that I was trying to get some distance from the place I was.
Yeah.
And so that, it's a strong thing that I think collectively everyone learns when you move somewhere. Yeah. I didn't feel like we were running away at the time, but what I knew was that I needed some definite different kinds of growth. And so that's the journey I've been on, and that has included every part of my life.
Wow. Can you share something about, like, what you said, the things you wanted to get distance from, they were also within you and in your relationship?
Well, I mean, I think patriarchy is one. And the way I define that is the way that this hurts men and women, where this point of view that men and women are not worth the same, their time is not worth the same. And so that was definitely present. That's present in all of us, right? It's like, you can't say you're not racist. You can't say you're not, you know, have this view, because it's just where we swim in. What I didn't realize was how present it was, because that's how we were raised. And so really isolating the two of us, and it was just kind of us against the world, especially those first few years, we really had to sit with these things. We really had to sit with the decisions we had made and how they had been against my life goals, and not no one's fault, no one's anything. It was also the place we were. It's very hard to fight against the current if there's no daycare, there's no, so, and we're both very ambitious. And so it really gave us a chance to without anyone's input, because again, I lived in paradise with the most perfect life. No one was going to say, oh yeah, you guys should totally reevaluate everything. Like that was not going to happen where we were from, but that's what needed to happen.
Yeah. Were there things that you had to unlearn from yourself, like, even though you knew, like, okay, this is how I was raised, this is the system, but I do things that actually reinforce those things from the system or that environment that I grew up in, that you had to unlearn when you were abroad?
Yes and no. I think that how I would frame it now is I had to learn to honor it. So unlearning, sure, if you're doing some work around your patterns. But I think for me, that starts with honoring it and learning what it's trying to do for you. And then it changes, or you can't do, at least in my experience, it can't be, I'm going to unlearn this. Yeah. So I've learned what my process has been is to honor it and actually own it as part of my story and claim it.
Can you share an example of how you've been doing that?
Yeah. Well, an example. So when I was growing up, I thought it was so boring that I was a daughter of the Utah Pioneers and all this funny Mormon heritage. I was kind of thought, oh, my ancestors were kind of gullible. You know, I mean, and everyone has this, right, where they grow up is not interesting to them.
Yeah.
And so now really going back into it, because my journey has been, I think in middle age, you kind of do this anyway. So this has been the journey of my 40s. And it's been kind of back to the spiritual center of where I want to be instead of against something, which is something I don't like about where I'm from. You either have to be for or against.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Good or right. This, good or wrong. Yeah.
Yeah. So this gave me a chance to find my own spiritual center. And that includes actually going back and claiming what was really inspirational or perhaps even wise about why my ancestors would have joined the Mormon Church in Europe, crossed the plains. And also has given me some insight into this reverse migration trend that I'm seeing now that I kind of was doing myself before it was kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And so it almost is like I had to come back to my roots, even though I don't have ancestry in the Netherlands. It's mostly in England, but this crossing the ocean, going through a few years of hardship, restarting life, that has given me a lot of insight into maybe some of the trauma that my ancestry carries that maybe isn't mine, but I'm still dealing with or responsible for.
Exactly.
And yeah, like I said, giving it a lot of presence, love, acceptance, that has been my journey, I would say.
Yeah, beautiful. I love also that you you have such a systemic kind of view. I'm also trained as a systemic coach, and there we look at not just you as an individual, but also where you come from. And so your family is your primary system in a way. And the fact that your ancestors, you know, had the same kind of crossing just the other way around, and now you're doing that. It's also a pattern that repeats itself then. It's it's something of that system that you belong to. So that's very interesting. I was also curious if living in Amsterdam and having migrated and possibly now just staying there for a longer time, I'm not sure. Has it also impacted your identity more general? So not just looking at your roots, but also you as a person, emotionally, spiritually, how do you view yourself now?
Well, now you're getting into my life's work. So House of Peregrine, this is the root of House of Peregrine, because people ask you, or you're looking at identity all the time when you introduce yourself, when you, wherever you are, people want to know who, why, what you are, right? And when you're an international person or you're traveling a lot, you end up introducing yourself a lot more than you would if you were just living in your hometown your whole life. And so it gives you both the chance to redefine your identity, but also you have to explain it a lot.
Yeah.
And so I ended up being confused about how to introduce myself. And so it was like, oh, are you an expat? I don't think so. Are you an immigrant? Well, maybe. I'm here as long as it works for me. I don't know if it's permanently. And so it sent me off on this quest to find a word that I could really identify with. And what I noticed the first year I was here is I had this group of women from my kid's school that were from five different countries, some of which my country had been at war with when I was little. And we all had more in common with each other for the reasons, our values, than we did with the place we grew up with. And so we had all moved for similar reasons. We had all had similar life experiences or values that came from nowhere, really, that was just deep inside of us. And so I started looking for a word, and peregrine is what came up, which is the fastest animal in the world, but it can live on any continent, but it means outsider. So wherever this bird is, it's an outsider. You can take that as you will, but if you've had this experience, you'll understand that that's a very resonant feeling that when you go back home, you now feel like you don't belong. And the place you've lived, even for 9 years, you don't quite feel like you belong. Even if you speak the language, even if you have friends from there, you are now something different. And it is a worldwide population of people who have had this experience. And that, I guess I claimed that identity for myself, and now I'm bestowing it to others.
Yeah, nice. Beautifully. So how are you bestowing that to others?
Well, first by naming it. I mean, that's that goes a long way. And sometimes when I tell people the definition of House of Peregrine, they start crying. they realize that there's something to what they've been feeling that they weren't able to name. And it's not just them. It's not just that person. Because sometimes when you move abroad for a job or something, you don't realize it's going to change your life forever. You don't realize you're suddenly not going to feel a sense of home in one place ever again.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the number one thing, naming it. And then inviting people into the experience of actually having a collective identity. And we do that through technology, through events, through, we make a lot of media, just around this idea, because there's no precedence. Like when I had a baby, there was like a baby shower. There were like baby articles to prepare me for birth. There were, you know, when I went to university, there was like, you know, catalogs and, you know, all sorts of ritual and process, I guess, to help me understand what I was going through. And so that is what House of Peregrine is much about, is naming, bestowing, and creating around this idea that there is a population of people who have this, and it's not going away. You don't get to undo living in a different country, even if you go back.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. Yeah. And do you think, because you said that the idea originated when you met all these different women from different countries, and you found out the animal that really captures that sense of like, hey, I'm an outsider. Do you think maybe the origin for your business also started in your roots, as you also felt like an outsider?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I found others now that that have the same, where they grew up as nomads, like second or third generation nomads, or their parents were diplomats. And so they spent their whole childhood and even still now living in different countries. They actually have been able to trace that back to their ancestors. And so this is, you know, this is probably older than living in one place, this nomadic impulse, if you will, or value. It's just, we don't hear about it that much.
No, yeah, we don't. Yeah.
So absolutely, I think it did. And again, that the research that has been really interesting for me to be able to do while I've been here, not really, just like identity, is realizing that a lot of the people that came across the plains were nomadic with the Mormon pioneers. Mm-hmm. They did come from, you know, gypsy tribes or things that were happening in Europe that Americans just don't learn about in history. And so that has been really gratifying and also reclaiming, because we kind of get the sanitized version of the story. And for me, always, the depth and the meaning in a story comes from these little nitty gritty details. So that's what I've been able to find.
Very nice. You also have three kids. So they are growing up in a different country than they were born. So you're passing on the nomadic pattern in your system. How are you giving them the roots that they really feel like, hey, I belong here? How do you take care of that?
Yeah. And I actually cover this a lot on my podcast, my own podcast, because I'm learning from my guests, if that makes sense. I don't have a map for this. And so the number one thing I did from the beginning was not claim to be Dutch. Like I'm their English-American, you know, touchstone. And so that's always been very clear. That's presented some challenges because I didn't learn Dutch as quickly as I maybe should have, because it scared them when I spoke Dutch. It made them feel scared.
It's a harsh language.
But it's also like seeing your parents speak a language poorly when they're little is scary.
Yeah.
Or at least it was for my kids. And so they're knowing that they have a very strong foundation with my husband and I has been the number one. Number two is visiting family as much as possible, giving them that other route where their heritage is. And so that is like its own kind of therapy. When we come back from that, their Dutch improves, their everything improves. It's a somatic experience of belonging that has to be there if possible. It's expensive, but it's necessary. It's enjoyable. We like seeing our family, but it's also it's a necessary ingredient for us.
It's so interesting.
And then just letting them know.
After that,
everything improves. Yeah,
that's
everything.
So interesting.
Improves.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't speak Dutch for 6 weeks. Come back, it's better.
So they're nurtured in a way.
they're nurtured in a very specific way.
Cool.
And then letting them know they're different, because they've gone to Dutch school their entire career, but they still make friends with the international kids. They have really good Dutch friends, but they just don't have the same experience. My kids can't see their grandparents every weekend. Yeah. We don't have grandma and grandpa at our house. We travel a lot and far to places some of their friends have never been, right? Mm-hmm. We have the privilege of going back to the US, but most of their classmates have never been there. And so we just are living a drastically different life than our neighbors, and just acknowledging that so they know why they feel different.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good one.
And then the last part is just honoring what it is we're doing and explaining it to them and the whys, and making them, now that they're older, a part of it. So we're always asking them, you know, it's all five of us have to be doing well in order for us to stay here. We're lucky enough that we can choose. And as long as all five of us are happy, we stay.
Yeah. Are there some things that you learned, like rituals or things that you do in your family or in Utah, that you're now passing on to your children as well, which is not a very Dutch thing?
Not a very Dutch thing. You know, we have a family ceremony at least twice a month. That's a little bit like Mormon family home evening. So Mormon family, I didn't do this in my home because my family wasn't devoutly Mormon, but it's something I always liked. So family home evening is Monday night. You make cookies and sit around and hang out, basically.
Okay.
And we do that on Sundays, and then usually talk about something cultural, metaphysical, just what they're wondering about. So I guess that's the closest thing. We don't attend a church. But we do tell our kids what our beliefs are, which are different. And so I guess it's similar to church.
Yeah. Okay. But the family ceremony, that sounds really nice. It's very intentional. So,
It's like cacao, sitting together, you know, sound bowl. And then they're almost teenagers now. But before, it was a lot about just intentional eye contact and letting them ask really hard questions.
Okay. Wow. Interesting. Mikael, I always have one question for my guests on the show, and maybe you want to answer it in the theme that we just talked about, but I'll open it up for anything that you want to share. But what is your number one hack or tip to make living abroad easier, better, or more fun?
More fun living abroad. You know, I really think having really hard conversations before you leave, before you leave stability. It's a boring answer, but it makes everything else a lot easier. So knowing what you'll do if a parent's in the hospital, or knowing how you'll split your assets if you do separate, that provides a lot of stability that then leads to a lot of ease when you are in that new country. So whether you're doing it for the first time or for the 20th time, before you leave stability and homeostasis, having some of those hard conversations, goal setting, all the boring stuff, even if it's informal, for me, gives a lot of freedom.
Yeah. Well, goal setting, I think, is very fun. Not boring at all. But yeah,
I totally agree.
when everything is stable, it's good to have these conversations. Because when things happen, you know, that's not the space that you can think clearly all the time. So yeah.
No matter how good you are at it, it's a huge explosion whenever you move.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Great. Mikael, thank you so much for sharing your story. It was really interesting. And I loved how you so intentionally shaped your journey as a nomad now, but also passing that on to your children and how you take care of your roots. And I really appreciated you sharing this here.
Yeah, cool. Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, I've really enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to the Global Woman series on This Expat Life. If this conversation moved you, made you think, or made you feel a little less alone, share it with someone who needs to hear it too, so that we can grow our community of self-led expats across the globe. And make sure to subscribe, as we have new episodes coming out every week. Until next time, wherever you are in the world.